Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
And welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. During today's conversation, I ask a question of my guest. This question, it elicits a response that leaves me slightly speechless and almost on the verge of tears. I decided to leave it in, and I'm thankful to my guest for being so truly open with me. Today's guest has spent 20 years in digital marketing, consulting for more than 700 companies during that period, including 30 of the Fortune 500. His current company, Convince & Convert, is the fifth multi-million dollar company he has started from scratch. Before his move into digital marketing in 1994, he was a brand marketer and a political consultant with major roles in state, federal, and presidential electoral campaigns. His second book, Utility, Why Smart Marketing is About Help, Not Hype, was number 3 on the New York Times bestsellers list. Now, let's hack Jay Bear. I want to thank today's sponsor, FreshBooks. More than just a sponsor, FreshBooks plays a huge role in keeping me and my business organized and profitable. And this is really, really obvious to me now, having just gone through another year end. Usually the end of the year would be an incredible headache for me and my accountant, but not this year. Now, rather than handing my accountant a giant box of papers and receipts, I simply email her my reports, journal entries, and it's not only easier, but it's way more cost-effective than paying her to sort through it herself. The best part was that it was so easy to learn how to use, and whenever I've had an issue, their support team is awesome. They're voted the number one customer support team in the world. With FreshBooks support, help is forever free, and I get to speak to a real, live human every single time. Try FreshBooks for free today and for 30 days with no obligation. Setup only takes a minute, no credit card is required, and you can cancel at any time. Go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section when signing up. Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. We have an absolutely amazing guest today, Jay. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, John. We'll see just how amazing I am in just a moment.
We definitely will. All right, Jay, let's jump right into it. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, I think I'm very consistent with how I execute things, right? So I'll give you an example. One of my business is a media company. We have a very popular blog called Convince and Convert, and I have written or been responsible for the writing of between 3 and 8 blog posts a week, every week without fail for 6.5 years. And I find that many people start off with an idea that they're really passionate about, but then that passion tends to get waylaid or backburnered or somehow superseded either by life or a steady diminishment of the passion that got them there in the first place. And one of the things I tell people, especially who want to be a blogger or some sort of a podcaster or a content creator of any type, is that media companies work on perspiration, not inspiration, right? If it's, hey, I'm only going to create something when I feel like I have something to say, it's going to be real easy to set that aside. If you say, look, I have a schedule and this is the schedule that I'm going to stick to forever, your wins and your entrepreneurial successes tend to grow geometrically over time.
Excellent. Okay, I have 2 questions from that. So this is interesting because 3 to 8 blog posts a week, that's impressive. And lots of people now I hear are talking, I'm getting new into creating a ton of content around Hack the Entrepreneur. And I've had a lot of people say that you need to spend, say, 50% of your time creating content, 50% of your time promoting it, or 20% of your time creating it, 80% promoting it. Does that make sense? Or which of those rules would you follow? Or do you think the content should be created in a way that it kind of promotes itself?
Yeah, that doesn't really work. And that concept isn't really true in actuality. The content has to be good, right? It has to pass what I call the mom test. And that's true for my content. It's true for your content, John. It's true for corporate clients that we do consulting for. And the mom test is that, look, if your mom, who loves you unconditionally, isn't interested in this content, wouldn't share this content, then certainly your customers or prospective customers or fans are not going to be that excited about it, right? It just has to be good enough to pass the mom test on a consistent basis. And so you've got to focus first on figuring out what you're good at from a content perspective and really keep at it. And then once you sort of have your formula, if you will, and I don't want to make it sound formulaic, but once you sort of have your formula figured out, then you most definitely have to figure out a distribution vehicle, right? The problem with most content creators is that they don't market their marketing. They just assume, well, the content is good, therefore it will find an audience. And sometimes that happens, but usually it doesn't. There's tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of great content out there that nobody is aware of because they don't distribute it. They don't put any effort into creating an audience for it.
True. Very true. And the other thing you said was that media companies, when you say a media company, how do you define a media company? Do you define all companies now as media companies? Or are you talking like blogs could the screw company, say down the street that manufactures screws, could they become a media company, do you think, to then promote their product?
I believe that any entity, individual, or organization that is creating content indirectly or directly for a commercial purpose is a media company. So if you have a podcast because you hope that somebody will hire you as a consultant, you're a media company. If you have a blog because you want to put an affiliate program link into that blog and you're going to make a few dollars a month from Amazon, you are a media company. If you're like me and you've got, you know, three podcasts and two blogs and books and a video series and all these things, and we actually have ads and sponsors, we are most definitely a media company in part. So I think all of those things are versions of media companies, and you need to align your thinking and your business model accordingly.
I was hoping you were going to say that because I absolutely agree. I love that. All right, Jay, you said that your one thing that you do is consistent with your execution. Can you tell us something in business that you are not good at and you have to delegate out?
Somewhat ironically, I'm not great at follow through. I'm particularly good, right? I'm particularly good at ideas and sort of seeing over the horizon. I'm not particularly good at execution. And so there are a few things that I force myself to execute consistently, like blogging, like podcasting, like other forms of content creation. But what I've discovered now, having been an entrepreneur for 20 years or so through many different guises, is that, you know, I'm not great at follow through. I'm not necessarily great at details. And so what I try and do is surround myself with people who are. And we have this rule in my company where every year we try to replace 15% of my time. That's our standard metric. So every year we say, okay, what am I spending my time on? Let's find 15% of that somebody else could do. And if you do that every year, if you replace 15% of your own time every year, eventually, you know, after 4 or 5 years, you're pretty much spending your time on the things that you are uniquely qualified to do. And that's how you move from an entrepreneur to an actual successful company.
Yeah, brilliant. So you're good. I love how you're good at consistent with execution, but not good at follow through. It's a good...
Yeah, I know.
It's a good
twist.
That's
hard to believe, right?
It's a good twist. I like that. All right, Jay. So 20 years as an entrepreneur. Let's go back 20 years because I find there's a time in every entrepreneur's life where they realize one of two things. Either they have a calling to go make something big or make a difference in the world, or they realize simply that they just can't work for somebody else. Can you tell me which one of these you are and how this happened for you?
Oh, definitely the latter. I do not have the ego or the hubris to believe that I am changing the world. You know, I'm just a guy from a small town in Arizona who has convinced people to listen to him. That is the core of my entrepreneurship. So I come from a long line of self-employed people, however. I mean, my family has owned their own businesses for the most part for like 6 or 7 generations. So it wasn't necessarily, you know, it's not like we sat down around the dinner table and my parents said, hey, when are you going to start your own thing? It was just the culture that I grew up in. You know, it just, that's sort of what you did. So I always knew that I wanted to go down that road. I wanted to be self-determinant in my own path and my own decision-making. But like many younger people, I was just scared. I was just scared to do it. And also I had sort of a classic entrepreneurship problem that some people have faced in that, you know, I had a pretty good gig as a non-entrepreneur. I was already in the technology business and I was, you know, senior director of this or that, working for companies, getting paid pretty good coin for my age. And so it was like, well, I could walk off this short pier and start my own thing, or I could continue to get pretty well compensated for doing this on behalf of somebody else. And that was sort of the crossroads that I found myself at.
And was there something that came like a distinct point where you made that, like, did something happen in that position?
Yeah. Absolutely. I don't talk about the story very much, but so at this point I had kind of started some companies before where I had been a very early co-founder or general manager of some very early stage internet companies. And so I had sort of a taste of entrepreneurship in that capacity, really the thrill and those kind of things of building something from scratch, but it was not my money. It was never my money. So I sort of had all the sort of psychological benefits of entrepreneurship, but none of the financial benefits because I was sort of being the entrepreneur on behalf of somebody else. And so I'd done that for a couple times. And I was, when I finally decided to make a go of it, I was about, let's see, 32. So it was 14 years ago. And I was senior director of marketing for a startup company in Arizona, which essentially, and this is funny that we're talking to each other on Skype, the company was essentially Skype, but like 10 years before Skype was invented. It was almost the exact same everything, same platform, same model. But at that point, right, we're talking a ways ago, right? It was, yeah, you know, late 90s. Nobody was saying, hey, this telephone is not working for me. I need a different solution, right? Everybody's like, well, why would you want to use the internet for telephones? Just we already have a telephone. Yeah, it was just way too early. So, but I was doing okay at that company. And at the same time, sorry, the story is so long, but at the same time,
it's all right, it's good.
My best friend growing up married my wife's sister. So my best friend became my brother-in-law, which is a fantastic situation that I totally recommend to all listeners. If you can engineer that somehow, it's excellent. It makes family gatherings far more interesting and entertaining. So he and I and our wives, who are sisters, and a couple other friends, we spent all of our time together. This is before anybody had kids, or I think our daughter was really young. And so we just spent tons and tons of time together and, you know, early 30s, had a little bit of cash, you know, it was good days. Well, right about then, kind of out of the blue, I was 32, he was 32, he was diagnosed with brain cancer. And called me up and said, hey, I went to the doctor and here's the diagnosis. And it really shook me up. And I walked in the next day and quit. And I said, you know, I've been afraid to go start my own thing for a long time. And what I realized in that sort of lightning bolt was, what am I really afraid of, right? The worst possible outcome for me is I'm going to start my own thing and it's not going to work out. And I go get a job in 5 minutes as somebody else's senior internet guy making pretty good money. Like, I realized that my downside was not nearly anywhere even in the same universe as his downside. And that was the push I needed. And I've never really worked for anybody since.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That's something that I guess is, it's a hard thing to realize in that way, right?
Yeah.
But it's true, right? I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure a lot of bad things have happened in your business since then, but none in comparison.
Exactly. And I tell entrepreneurs and would-be entrepreneurs this all the time when I talk about these subjects. Like, you know, if I can give you any piece of advice, it's to write down your fears. People always tell you to write down your goals. And yeah, I get that. I don't do that, actually. I think it's limiting, but I do write down my fears. And when you write down your fears and you give them voice and you give them shape and you put them on a piece of paper and you look at them, they don't seem so scary. When you dimensionalize your own fears, when you dimensionalize your own risk, it's amazing how much courage you can find that you didn't know you had. We get scared of things because we look at them in the abstract. When we look at them in the specific, it takes the power out of them. And it's something that I really try and live by, and it served me well.
I love that. I love that. Write down your fears.
Yep.
Don't write down your goals. That's great. KJ, thank you so much for that. Let's, if we can, transition into work. And you consistently create a ton of content still. You run a business. You have written 2 best-selling books and you speak a lot internationally. And you must be, and you're a father, you've mentioned. So you must be fairly busy. I want to know how you kind of set yourself up to have a productive day and get the things done that you need to get done. So could you walk us through today being a work day, say your first 30-minute morning routine to get you going?
Yeah, it's a struggle, right? I mean, because I do have a lot of things I've got going on. But, you know, my friend Rory Vaden, who's a terrific entrepreneur and speaker and author, he should be on the show, actually. He's awesome.
I would love to have him.
He has a saying in his new book, which is called Procrastinate on Purpose. And ever since I read the book, I got an early copy of it, and I think it's out in January. And it continues to like come into my head all the time. And it's that, you know what? Busy people aren't actually busier than anybody else. They're just worse at saying no. And it's so true. It's so true. And his whole book and his whole thesis is like, look, give yourself permission to say no, to only work on the things that multiply your time. And I'm trying to be a lot better at that because I get involved in some things that maybe I shouldn't. So I'm trying to get better at, you know, delegating things to different parts of the team and, you know, continuing to replace myself 15% a year, all those kind of things. But to go back to your actual question, I wake up, first thing I do, check my phone, go through my email. Then I kind of get myself together, take a quick look at the newspaper. Yes, I'm old enough to still read the print newspaper every day, which I know is hopelessly anachronistic, but that's kind of how I roll. It's a tradition for me.
Wow.
And as a former journalism major, I kind of feel like it's my duty to the craft.
Fair enough.
And then in the first things in the morning, I usually kind of think about content, right? So what are we creating? What am I creating? What needs to be created? Kind of where are we at on that schedule? And then when I'm not on the road, like I'm not so much right now because it's the holidays, there's not as many conferences and stuff. It's usually between 8 and 10 hours of calls and podcasts like this one and client calls. Like today I had 3 or 4 calls with potential partners, sponsors of my podcast next year, a couple of client exploratory calls, a webinar, 2 podcasts. So usually when I'm not on the road, my calendar from say 9 to 6 is straight through booked. It's just one call after another for, you know, 8 or 10 hours.
Wow. 9 to 6.
So I'll probably do, when I'm not on the road, I probably do between 40 to 50 telephone calls a week. And that includes podcasts and things like that.
Totally. That's serious. So you have to get your friend Rory is teaching you, you have to get better at saying no to things.
Yeah.
So your company has still says yes to things. I mean, you just started marketingpodcast.com.
Right.
You did a big push behind it. You did things. I'd like to know, say, let's just call it in general projects. Let's make marketing podcasts a project and part of Convince and Convert, say. How, when these ideas for projects or new things you guys should tackle come across your desk, how do you decide whether you should, as Rory says, learn to say no to them or to say yes and to run with them?
Well, see, that's my problem. See, that's actually my biggest problem right now is that I'm very good at seeing opportunity and saying, hey, we could build the very first search engine ever for podcasts. We could call it marketingpodcast.com. We could build it. We could get sponsors for it, all these things, and we can, and we did, and it's awesome, and it's totally working.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've got to feed that baby too, right? Now I've got to take care of that child. And so I sometimes find that my ability to see opportunities and also our ability as an organization to successfully execute on those ideas is on one hand a help, but on the other hand, it can take us out of the repeatable tasks that add kind of efficiency to the operation. Because every sort of quote unquote special project that I think up out of thin air may be a success in its own right and on its own merits, but the opportunity cost of spending time on that versus spending time on something that we were already doing is something that I'm starting to spend more time thinking about, because I've discovered that usually as an organization, we're better off doing the same kind of things over and over than doing a bunch of things once. And I have known that for a long time, but I'm constantly coming up with ideas for projects and businesses and opportunities constantly. Mm-hmm. And putting a governor on that is really hard for me. Really, really hard for me.
It must get even harder as you like have built a team around you that can actually execute on these ideas now.
Yeah, because I know we can do it.
And I know
we can make money.
And successfully.
I know we can make money at them, right? So it's not about, you know, is this going to be a disaster? Because they're never a disaster. It's which of these ideas is a really good idea. And that's one of our primary strategic objectives for next year is to say, look, let's focus only on really good ideas, not just good ideas.
Excellent. You must have some ideas that don't go the way you want and that kind of backfire or do fail.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely things that we do or I get involved in that doesn't quite have the traction that we wanted it to. Sometimes I think we bail on it too early. Sometimes I overestimate our audience. Sometimes I underestimate our audience or overestimate people's general interests. We did a project this year that actually did well, just not stupendously well, where we took guests of our Social Pros podcast, which is a weekly show where we interview somebody who's a manager of social media for a big brand. And we created a whole series of eBooks called the Social Pros All-Stars, where we designed them to look like baseball cards and put their career backgrounds on them and everything. It really looked like a baseball card. It's pretty cool. And the idea was to figure out, hey, what are the commonalities of educational background, career path, et cetera, that leads somebody to be social media manager for Ford or JCPenney or Pepsi or what have you. And we actually did find a lot of commonalities. It was pretty interesting in terms of what other jobs they'd had prior and what they studied at university, et cetera. It's pretty interesting. And it did fine. I think we got like 20,000 downloads on SlideShare, that kind of thing, but it didn't do great. It didn't do amazing. And so we ended up shelving that product and worked on some other things. So that kind of thing happens sometimes. But if you're going to be in the content business, you know, they're not all going to be home runs, right? I mean, I do a lot of angel investing now. I think I'm invested in 14 companies.
Wow.
And some of them aren't going to make it, right? Some of them are just not going to make it, yeah. But some of them are. And that's, you know, you have to be okay with that going into it.
Yeah, you do. Excellent. Okay, Jay, let's finish with success and the future. You've done a lot. You've done a lot of really big things. You've made a great brand for yourself. You've created, I think, 5 successful multi-million dollar businesses from scratch at this point, your bio says.
True.
If your career was to end today through some tragedy, would you be happy with the legacy that you've left at this point?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm totally playing with house money. Like I said, I'm a kid from a small town in Arizona who convinced people to listen to him. That is true. That's not just a line. That's exactly how I look at it. I am extraordinarily grateful for every dollar we generate as consultants and every dollar we generate from sponsors and everything else, right? And everybody who reads a blog post or listens to a podcast or buys a book that I'm behind, I don't take that lightly. I mean, there's a lot of people out there trying to tell people how to run their business or do their marketing. And the fact that anybody would spend 5 minutes listening to me amidst that sea of potential advisors is something that I really, really treasure. So yeah, I would be perfectly happy to shut it down. And as I've said in the past, I mean, I would do this job for free. I'm really glad I don't have to, but I totally would do it for free. It's truly an honor and a privilege to do what I do every day.
Wow. And it's been an honor and a privilege to talk to you today, Jay. We've talked a lot about you. We've talked about your books and your business, but can you just clearly tell people where they should go find out more about Jay Bear?
You bet. Lots of places to go. Probably the easiest is if you go to our main website, which is convinceandconvert.com. You'll find all the books. You'll find our podcasts, our blog, our email, all that kind of stuff. That's the best place, convinceandconvert.com.
Excellent. I will link to that in the show notes for everyone so they can find it and go reach out to Jay and just watch what he's doing because it's great.
Thank you.
Jay, thank you. I truly appreciate you taking the time with us.
My pleasure, John. Thanks a lot.
Jay, thank you so much for joining me. That was so much fun. I really appreciate you taking the time and also for just being so open and for sharing with us how you did. Maybe some of my questions, I don't know, maybe went into different places, but it was fun. And I'm just so glad that you didn't hold back for us. It was fun, Jay. So make sure you check out the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. I'll have show notes for Jay on there, and we'll link to his website, his podcast, everything, so you can learn more. If you're into building a business and marketing, you need to learn about Convince and Convert, because that blog and what Jay's doing it's going to teach you everything you need to know. And also his book, Utility. I read it this past summer during the first month of creation of Hack the Entrepreneur, before I even released the show. I read Utility and I feel that I learned a lot from it, and about the giving and helping rather than hyping. So thank you so much, Jay. You said a lot of cool things. But Jay, you said one thing, didn't he? He said one thing. And did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
It's to write down your fears. People always tell you to write down your goals. And yeah, I get that. I don't do that, actually. I think it's limiting, but I do write down my fears. And when you write down your fears and you give them voice and you give them shape and you put them on a piece of paper and you look at them, they don't seem so scary. When you dimensionalize your own fears, when you dimensionalize your own risk, it's amazing how much courage you can find that you didn't know you had.
And that's the hack. Beautifully said, Jay. And this is interesting because back in episode 36 with Rob Cubbin, we had a great conversation about creating like your first product or a training course. He was doing it with Udemy and he's like kicking butt at it. And we had the discussion, but we didn't say it nearly as eloquently as Jay just did, which was, what is the worst that can happen? It's typically your fear that you're scared of. And so the idea, especially now coming into a new year, and I had this conversation with Jay right before the end of 2014. So I got to think of it as people around me were all creating goals. And then I was like, no, it makes way more sense. Goals don't maybe push me in that way, or they can be limiting because you could reach that goal and then what do you do? But the fear is the thing that really, if you write it down on paper, and what is it I'm scared of? If I start this business, why am I not taking action on these ideas? Why am I not taking action and starting this business or going anywhere towards my goals? And when I really look at it, it's because I'm scared. I'm scared because I don't know huge amounts of aspects of this business, or I had no idea. I still don't know how to make software, if that's okay to say, but I run a software company. I'm not technically savvy in any way. And if I would have let those fears hold me back, I would still be working a job doing energy audits, is what I did before this, in houses, which is going and checking houses for energy efficiency. And I would just dreadful. I had to leave the house all the time. I was always working. And now I get to just stay at home with my family and work from here. And it's fear-based why we don't do things, more so than the fact that we didn't set the right goals. And Jay, thank you so much, because I think you're going to completely transform the way I look at this new year and setting myself up with my fears. I have a page right now written, and every time something holds me up from doing something now, I add it to this fears page and dimensionalize it in that way that Jay said. And it's opened me up in a lot of ways, and it's let me see properly the mistakes that I've made in that thinking and seeing how limiting it truly is by not doing this. So write down your fears, guys. Don't write down your goals. I love it. Jay, thank you so much. So this has been a lot of fun, guys. I do want to thank you again so much. Check out the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. Get on the mailing list. The mailing list is a lot of fun. Every week I'm sending out an email to you guys and getting some great feedback. Kind of my best stuff that I'm coming up with in the week. I'm not sharing it on the blog anymore. I'm sharing it to the email list only. And yeah, I think it's just a great place to be, right? If you have had a chance, or if you are on your phone right now or at a computer, hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes. I would love a review. I think we just broke 225 five-star reviews. It takes like 2 minutes. You have no idea how powerful and how much it helps the show. And it helps me to be able to get more reach and to get and continue just to get amazing guests on the show for you. If you've done that already, I thank you so much. And if you do get a chance to leave a review, put your Twitter handle on there, at your name, whatever it happens to be for Twitter, so I can come onto Twitter and say thank you and reach out to you and give you a follow, hopefully, because I don't get to know who you are when you just do it on iTunes. But I do truly appreciate each and every one of you for doing it. So thank you very much. As always, this has been fun. This has been great. And I look so forward to doing the next episode with you guys. But until then, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.